Hey, everybody. It's the Charlie Kirk Show. 79 years since D-Day. Is America in a better spot, a freer spot? Have we honored the commitment, the sacrifice, and the bravery and the courage of the greatest generation? And then Anna Paulina joins us to talk about how the FBI is concerned that a Biden informant might get murdered if he speaks out. Email us freedom@charliekirk.com. Subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast by opening up your podcast app and typing in Charlie Kirk Show. And get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. 79 years ago, 77,000 U.S. troops participated in what is now known as D-Day. Around 3,000 of them were killed, about one in every 25. Thousands more would die in the days and weeks afterwards. Overall, 420,000 servicemen died to defeat Japan and Nazi Germany. You've all seen probably Saving Private Ryan, and it's accurate in some ways, but it's very misleading as far as the age. You look at the age of Tom Hanks or even Vin Diesel or Matt Damon, they look in their early 30s or 40s. The average age of the U.S. soldier in 1944 was 26. Most were in their early 20s, substantially younger than I am at 29 right now. Now, these people, these heroes, were brave, actually brave. People had to go to a far-off country they knew nothing about, risk death or be gruesomely maimed in a hellish environment for the sake of their country, out of duty and obligation. 79 years have passed. So what gets considered to be brave today? Basically the exact opposite. Today we have California State Senator Scott Wiener celebrating drag queens as this is the symbol of bravery. Scott Wiener, who is an elected representative, right here, Cut 31, honoring in the California legislature. 79 years later, we go from a nation that storms the beach to fight tyranny to a nation that is honoring drag queens in our state capitals, our largest state, California. This is what is considered to be brave. Play Cut 31.
So proud of Sister Roma and her work in the community, and I'm proud of California for standing strong to support LGBTQ people as our community is under assault in the rest of the country.
Sister Roma went on to say it's an incredible honor to have been nominated. She says being recognized not only means a lot to her, but the LGBTQ community at large.
If you read what was being narrated in that opening clip, that is the Supreme Headquarters Allied Expeditionary Force, a letter written by Dwight D. Eisenhower to every single member of the Expeditionary Force. Do you know what's amazing when you read this? The elimination of Nazi tyranny over the oppressed peoples of Europe. 79 years later, we feel like the oppressed people of America, don't we? We're locking up our political dissidents. We're spying on people that are considered to be deplorable. We have feds in FBI infiltrators in Latin Mass. Parents are being spied on that go to school board meetings. And what is considered to be brave and virtuous and heroic is a narcissistic, mentally delusional man wearing a dress and dancing in front of kids. That's considered to be brave. Those are the new heroes. It's not bravery, it's propaganda. So what were the D-Day soldiers fighting for? If you ask them, they'd probably have similar answers. Our Constitution, our freedom, our duty, so that future generations could live free in a strong country. They might have said that they were fighting for Christian civilization against the forces that wanted to annihilate it. And in the official document by Dwight D. Eisenhower 79 years ago, what does he say? Let us beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking. I have a question. How many trans flags were there 79 years ago? How many gay flags were there when those heroes stormed the beach? Did they have white rage? Show some of that B-roll. Was that white rage? A largely white force that invaded D-Day against the Nazis? Is that what Mark Milley means by understanding white rage 79 years later? This right here would be considered toxic masculinity. Look at all those men who think they're better than the Nazis. Most of those soldiers are fortunate enough not to be around anymore. I don't say that sarcastically. I know people that served in World War II who supported us generously at Turning Point USA. They wouldn't want to see what America has become. If they were, would they regret their sacrifice? The country is an insult to the sacrifice of the heroism and the bravery and the courage, the actual bravery, what this country has become. So what's left of it? Today we give public honors to drag queens who publicly humiliate the religion that more than 90% of World War II servicemen believed in. Today's America would consider World War II servicemen to be unfathomable bigots and white, cisgender, heteronormative jerks. Right now, do you think there are more kids in America honoring and remembering D-Day or honoring and remembering Pride? Right now. By the way, it wasn't just America that stormed the beach. There were Canadian forces. So look at this clip, cut 29, Pride Day at St. Matthew's School in Newfoundland, Canada. Play cut 29. Canada was fighting right alongside us. God bless the Canadians that also sacrificed in the invasion on Normandy Beach. We didn't have to do that. We didn't have to mobilize our forces and lose 420,000 men. We did not have to do that. Why did we do it? Because we were a strong, vigorous, brave, heroic country. We were tough. We didn't have this political correctness nonsense, this social contagion of critical Marxism that has infiltrated our country. Yeah, it was an intolerant country in some ways. We were intolerant of crap back then. If you had a man wearing a dress that wanted to invade, you say, you're done. You got mental conditions. Go back home. That's what they would have said. If you had some guy that wanted to wave some sort of rainbow flag, they'd say, we got a war to win. Get out of here. You got some guy that is fragile because some general is yelling at him. They'd say, you're not cut out for this. We're here to go win a war. It's filled with alpha men. Filled with people that were willing to dedicate and sacrifice. If you had a man that tried to go into the girls' locker room, that would not have been allowed by laws. Would not have been allowed. 79 years later, I want to involve you, the audience. What went wrong in the last 79 years? Prayer no longer in our schools, spiritual destruction. We remember the heroism 79 years later, but we would be remiss not to say that their commitment, their bravery 79 years later is not the same country. We now look more like the people, the government we were fighting 79 years later than the country we were trying to preserve. I want to talk about ReliefFactor.com. I want you guys to check out ReliefFactor.com, 100% drug-free, knee pain, back pain, joint pain, elbow pain. Check out Relief Factor Energy. Help makes your body make nutrients readily available. Relief Factor Sleep. I know a lot of you are probably having trouble sleeping. Relief Factor Sleep could be the best solution for you. Everybody goes to bed. Not everybody sleeps. We're all about helping people live lives that are filled with connection, exploration, passion, and emotion. That is what his life is all about. Make sure you guys are sleeping well. It's a major part of life. Check it out right now. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. It is not what we fought for. 79 years later, it's fair to say that we defecated on the country that they gave us. We got too lazy. We took God out of our schools. We thought tolerance was a value. We allowed this idea of social contagion liberalism to seep in. And it was best summarized. I met a group of people in Boise, Idaho while I was eating dinner. And you know, they said, I said, oh, look at all these gay flags. They said, yeah, I don't like it. And he said, this one guy was like, but, you know, if somebody wants to be trans, it's not my business. It's not my business, you know. I said, what do you mean? He's like, well, you know, I want to be tolerant of all people. I said, where do you get that belief from? You know what he said? He said, I don't want to be like my parents. I said, what, tell me about your parents. He said, yeah, they were from the World War II generation. He said, they were too close-minded. I said, so you're a product of the 60s and 70s, aren't you? And we got into this conversation that was very illuminating. It's that some of the baby boomers, they felt that the greatest generation was a little bit too loyal to those biblical roots. Not every baby boomer, because I'm going to get about 50,000 emails right now, but that is a prevailing zeitgeist spirit of the times of 60s and 70s liberalism. Ah, my parents that stormed the beach and they won the war, they're good and all, but I'm not going to honor their worldview. We have to allow all views to be equal, which of course we now know that the ultimate result of liberalism without conservative restraint is tyrannical degeneracy. And it leads to tyranny, the very same tyranny that we stormed the beach to try and fight. 79 years later, the tyranny that we used to consider to be objectionable is here in different forms and fashion. It's not obviously as bad, but boy, that same sort of element of ultimate totalitarianism, it's here in so many different regards and fashions, and you see it. I want to show a picture for you, and for those of you on radio or podcasting, we'll put it on charliekirk.com. Before I show it, I see this picture and I see heroes. I see bravery, I see clarity, I see wisdom, and I see fortitude. Before I show this picture on screen, the first and initial gut reaction out of almost every government educator, every government bureaucrat, and every young person in America will be this: too many white men. There's Dwight D. Eisenhower with the Allied Expeditionary Force making the decision, the final decision of logistics, to execute a military masterclass, one of the most incredible acts of deception and logistics in history. And it was impeccably planned. I could do a whole program on this. Blake knows it far better than I do. I know it enough as a layman. Just the logistics of moving the landing boats and the landing crafts and deceiving the Nazis for them to believe that they weren't actually going to Normandy, and using inflatable boats at a different landing sector. And this was America's greatest triumph. We also had the Lord on our side. One of the Nazi generals actually was in Paris, I believe, because he refused to believe that we were going to invade at that particular time. The Lord was behind us. Terrible weather at one point. So I want you to imagine, some of you might have nerves, like, oh, I'm going to the doctor and I'm nervous, totally get it. I'm going to go give a public speak and I'm nervous. Imagine knowing you're about to go into hell and you don't know the day, the time, or the hour. These men, largely white men, and I say that only because I'm sick of white men being demonized in America, didn't even know when they were going to enter hell. They didn't know if it was going to be tomorrow. Could you imagine the nerves or the anxiety? And then if you pierce that front line of D-Day, hell is only beginning. You have to fight a Nazi in the cornfields, at the conquered Delhi, all the way to Paris. And then if that's not bad enough, you have to go through the Battle of the Bulge. But no. They're the problem. The new heroes are men in dresses. Look, it is time to consider a rollover of that 401k into an IRA. The investment world is completely different in 2023, and you cannot do the same thing as last year. Woke companies are aggressively implementing ESG. Interest rates are going up and inflation is still lingering. If you have over $150,000, now is the time to move your money to a biblical responsible investing strategy with my friends at Pax Financial Group. Here's how you can connect with Pax. Text Charlie to the number 74868. That's it. Just take out your phone. Text Charlie, C-H-A-R-L-I-E, to 74868. So take out your phone. Text Charlie to the number 74868 for biblical responsible investing Text Charlie to 74868. Anna Paulina Luna is with us. Super honored to say and blessed to say that she spent a significant period of time with Turning Point USA. And now she is fighting for our values wonderfully in Congress. Anna, welcome to the program. Anna, you've made some headlines, and I want to read this on air, where you said that the whistleblower against Hunter Biden is afraid to be disclosed because he or she might be murdered or killed. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I was actually, first of all, thank you for having me back on, Charlie, and appreciate everything you're doing with Turning Point. But aside from that, so we were in a briefing yesterday with Representative Comer, who's the chairman of House Oversight. And ultimately, what had ended up happening is the FBI refused to give over an unclassified document that had the name of the human source, which ultimately was responsible for bringing forward the information on Joe Biden, information that had stated that Joe Biden received a $5 million transaction from a foreign national while vice president of the United States. So that's one, public corruption. Two, as House Oversight, it is our job to investigate this. And I believe that this is grounds for impeachment, Charlie. But then also number three, the FBI then proceeded to state to Comer the reason why they couldn't release the document to him or the name of the informant and human source was because of the fact that they believed that this individual would be killed if unmasked. And so I'm sitting there and the rest of my colleagues were there. Jim Jordan was there. Comer was there. Byron Donalds was there. All of the staff, and you're hearing this, and it sounds like something you would see at, like, you know, in a mob movie or something in a James Bond film, but unfortunately this is U.S. politics, and so yeah. we're absolutely going to get to the bottom of it, but on Thursday we're now going to be holding a hearing to mark up the bill to hold the director of the FBI in contempt of Congress, and from what I'm hearing, from what Representative Comer has stated, that he's working on with Speaker McCarthy, that's likely going to go to the floor. And if this guy does not hand over the information that we're requesting, it's possible that he could be held in criminal contempt and go to jail.
So, Anna, who are they afraid is going to murder who? So is Biden going to murder this person? Is it going to be a Democrat operative? And, you know, the media is making fun of all this. Like, oh, I mean, let's just be honest, okay? That it might not be common, but it happens, okay, where you have powerful people that hire hitmen are a real part of society, okay? So you say the FBI is afraid that their informant will be killed if unmasked. Who are they afraid is going to do the killing?
You know, I wasn't there to hear that, and so I don't know the context of who they were implying, but I think that it's pretty safe to say that apparently the information is so good and credible. Information that I want to remind the listeners that they had previous to 2020. Okay, this goes back to the Obama administration, that they have credible fears that this individual will be killed. And I just want to talk about the credibility of this witness. This is not just, you know, some schmuck off the streets. This guy is, you know, or man or woman has been with the FBI for over 10 years as a human source and has been paid over six figures for information that they brought forward going back to the Obama administration. So to be clear, the FBI is basically stating to Congress that they have credible fears that this individual will be killed if unmasked. And this is the same FBI, mind you, that has a separate ongoing investigation where there is a mole that is leaking information to Hunter Biden, and the mole has a code name, One Eye. So this whole thing, the reason why we have to hold the FBI accountable is because, as we're seeing, there's clearly corruption.
So what is this One Eye thing? I don't understand. I mean, it's obviously not Dan Crenshaw. So who else could be this informant? Is this person have an eye patch or something? No, I don't understand why. What is the thing? And by the way, as I said, it's not Dan Crenshaw. I'm confused.
I have no idea who the individual is. The FBI has no idea who the individual is. That's just, I guess, information that they've picked up on sourcing. But this individual is a mole within the FBI that is leaking information to Hunter Biden about his active investigation, from what we're being told.
But is this, I mean, are they doing that in a pejorative way? Or is this, I mean, so Hunter Biden's source is someone that only has one eye? I mean, I can't imagine, that should narrow it down, right? I mean,
I don't know.
Just
I think
go
it's,
into the
I think it's a
FBI
code name.
And find people wearing eye patches or something?
No, I think it's just a code name, honestly. I don't think that it is probably anything descriptive. I think that it's just a code name that they use. for this individual. But yes, there's apparently a mole in the FBI that's leaking information to Hunter Biden.
Okay, so how is this? Is this a separate line then than the IRS whistleblower? What is the latest on that in regards to blowing the whistle on Hunter Biden's special treatment from the IRS?
So, I mean, there's multiple whistleblowers that have come forward, Charlie, so many to the point of, I mean, we literally just had Representative Comer state, and then on the 30th, the Israeli intelligence officer that was working with a Chinese company actually came out to say that he was in hiding because the DOJ cooked up charges against him for bringing forward information on the Biden family and their illegal business dealings. And they're now charging him as an international arms dealer. So there's many whistleblowers that have come forward. On the IRS whistleblower, I will have to double check. But what I can tell you is there's multiple. The one that I am most concerned about, though, is the one that the FBI has, because the information that the FBI has, I believe, is credible grounds for impeachment. And that $5 million transaction, that testimony from that human source, I mean, my goodness, Charlie, that means that this president is guilty of public corruption and bribery.
Yeah. So then what is the timeline here, right? I mean, this is so much, usually the cover-up is the crime that you're able to pinpoint, right? So where are we at right now with kind of pinpointing exposure of this? And meanwhile, the Department of Justice, just so everyone's clear, we've been warning about this, and Citizen Kane, the Department of Justice is likely to indict Donald Trump any day now. This looks like it's happening in real time. So Anna, are we really going to see Donald Trump indicted on paperwork stuff while you have this smoking gun international bribery scheme? Is it fair to say that Joe Biden took cash from a foreign country illegally?
Yes, I think it's very fair based on the statements made by the FBI, the documentation that the FBI has, as well as the fact that the FBI admitted that this is a document that is not made up. So the FBI actually made a statement about this document. House Judiciary is working on this. House Oversight is working on this. I think that this development, I think the fact that the FBI director, based on what Comer's stating and what Speaker McCarthy is now doing, is very likely to be charged with contempt of Congress, throws a wrench in things, because everything that they're accusing Trump of is what they are guilty of in the Biden administration. So when people are kind of creating a scene, you know, to distract people, you have to look at what's really happening behind the scenes. And that's what we're seeing taking place right now. I will say that just like what had happened with President Trump's initial indictment, because there was such a public outcry about it, it changed things. And I think the American people, instead of getting fatigued and saying, you know, there's nothing that I can do, I disagree with that. And I think that that's a defeatist perspective. There is something that you can do. You can get involved and you can call your representatives and you can essentially put pressure on them to do the right thing. And that's really what we need them to do right now. And so we'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks or so. I know that Chairman Comer, in meeting with us, the House GOP members of Oversight yesterday, came up with a good game plan, and that the fact that the Speaker supports it is going to be pretty instrumental. So on Thursday, it should be a pretty big deal for House Oversight, and you'll see that contempt of Congress charge being brought to the floor.
Against Christopher Wray.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the problem is that it's just going to then go to him, so he won't indict himself. But I do appreciate the effort. It's not as if Christopher Wray is going to put forward charging documents against himself. So Anna, I suppose the final question I have on this is what is the likely scenario? I mean, it looks as if this is an opening, an opportunity for the deep state to unload on Biden to create some political flex or flexibility to then go after Trump, to say, oh, look, we go after both sides. Are you starting to see any inclination that Democrats are starting to jump ship on Biden to go look for other alternatives for 2024?
No, in fact, the Democrat argument for this whole whistleblower informant situation coming forward, they're saying that it's just a made up conspiracy theory. And they're actually trying to say that it's Rudy Giuliani, and it's not Rudy Giuliani at all. And so they're, if anything, doubling down on Biden. But I think really the more important question is, does the Republican Party have the stomach to go forward with impeaching based on the evidence that we have? And I think that that's a question that is probably going to be answered in the next few weeks, because from what I'm seeing, Charlie, from the amount of evidence that's actually been brought forward with the bank transactions, now with this, the subpoena bank records, I mean, I think that we have more than enough information. The only other thing is we need two witnesses to go on record, and that's why it's so incredibly important that we get this informant's name.
Ana Paulina, thank you for joining us. I know you have to rejoin a House Oversight Committee or some committee hearing. So thank you so much, and we're going to stay on this, and hopefully we'll find out who this this one-eye guy is. Thank you so much, Ana.
Thanks, Charlie.
Andrew Weissman, remember Andrew Weissman? He was originally on the Mueller team until we exposed him and his connections to Hillary Clinton. I remember correctly, Andrew Weissman's wife had some sort of very close connection. There was something there. And if my memory serves me, Andrew Weissman ended up leaving the Mueller team for being far too political. But he is very, very well connected. Andrew Weissman is usually right about this stuff. Donald Trump's attorneys met with the Department of Justice yesterday. Donald Trump then on Truth Social, in an all caps post, said, quote, how can DOJ possibly charge me who did nothing wrong when no other presidents were charged, when Joe Biden won't be charged for anything, including the fact that he had 1,850 boxes, much of it classified, and some dating back to his Senate day when even Democrat senators are shocked. Also, Clinton had documents and won in court. That's true. Crooked Hillary destroyed 33,000 emails. That's true. Many classified and wasn't even close to being charged. Only Trump, the greatest witch hunt of all time. So that all of that is true what Trump is saying, but Trump is also putting that out there, and it kind of shows that DOJ is close to filing charges. Jack Smith, Department of Justice. Now, the only, the biggest threat to Trump's candidacy. Now, if you really wanted to act as if this was being wargamed, again, we're not even playing checkers. Democrats are playing chess. We're playing patty cake. We're playing rock, paper, scissors. We're not even on the same terrain. And we, meanwhile, we got Doug Burgum running for the presidency because he's a smart guy. Yeah, I'm going to play that clip for you in a second. The whole thing's a joke. If you really want to game this out, if Donald Trump is facing federal charges, he could still be a felon, run, and win the presidency. He cannot run and win the presidency if he was charged for insurrection or something adjacent to insurrection, which is likely going to be the next indictment. So if we're going to map this out, they're going to try to get him on documents, and then they're going to do Georgia, probably in August, Fannie Willis, and then they're probably going to get him on some sort of ridiculous incitement of insurrection or incitement to overthrow the United States. And as ridiculous and baseless as that is, they're going to file it in D.C., and they could basically get whatever they want in D.C. And meanwhile, we sit idly by, and we wait, and we listen, and we wait. Play cut 38.
Andrew Weissman, you've just issued a tantalizing and newsworthy tweet. Quote, a zillion stories about Trump case, but bottom line is that he's getting charged, and it will be in D.C. and this week. Open issues are whether others may be charged and whether they will be in D.C. or Florida.
The open issue is where the charges will be brought and who, if anyone, may be charged alongside Donald Trump. In other words, there may be conspirators. The one thing I'm pretty confident of is that we are going to see charges with respect to the classified documents case. And it seems by all accounts it's going to be this week, because I think that the DOJ will feel that internal pressure to move this along.
Okay, so they're going to indict Trump, and I just want to play this piece of tape from Doug Burgum's awful political ad. It's laughable. I'm a smart guy, but it is a window into how unprepared Republicans are for this moment. Doug Burgum is running for the presidency while they're indicting Donald Trump, a former president, while they're after Steve Bannon and all these people, and he thinks we need to become better listeners. Play cut 36.
Anger, yelling, infighting. That's not going to cut it anymore. Let's get things done. In North Dakota, we listen with respect and we talk things out.
Doug Burgum, small town boy, turned self-made, world-class business leader. Extraordinarily successful governor. a listener, and a doer. A smart guy who's achieved a lot.
This is your average Republican. He thinks he said, we listen with respect. You're going to listen with respect to the FBI. Yeah, that's what we need. We need to listen to the DOJ before they file charges against the president. World-class business leader, extraordinary successful governor, smart guy. That's your average Republican. When I rail against Republicans, while they are actively criminalizing half the country, they're spying on us, they're infiltrating our groups, January 6 people in a Gestapo, you have the governor of North Dakota saying we need better listeners. Yeah, in North Dakota, we sit down and work things out. How's that going to work, Doug Burgum? You're going to sit down and work things out with President Xi? You're going to sit down and work things out with Merrick Garland? They're coming for Trump. They're coming hard. And the alternative out there is a better listener, Doug Burgum. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.